All right, welcome everyone back to Three Ideas in 30 Minutes. And I just want to say I have a lot of nachas looking around this table. Everyone, I think the competitiveness with the hot dogs really gives me a lot of nachas. Although I think Jason Asher, he's flexing right now. This is just the onion ring with the cholent, with the hot dog, overstuffed salami. I hope your cardiologist is not listening to this. I told the guys, I said, maybe one week I'm going to surprise everyone. You're going to come and there's going to be like kale salad here. And everyone's going to go home crying that night. But until then, enjoy the Gashmius and enjoy the Ruchnius. Okay, I want to thank our three sponsors for this evening. Sponsored by Yudi Framutz in memory of his mother, Devora Bas Yehuda, on her upcoming Yurtzeit on the 6th of Adar. Is that Yehuda? Is that, that's
my father.
That's your father. Yeah, okay. And by the Ellis family, in loving memory of Zisha ben Shlomo Lev, Stephen Ellis, on his first year at site. Wow, I can't believe it's been 1 year. And of course, by our good friends, Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak, in gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS. We are very grateful to all three of our sponsors. And as always, our learning should be an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Tehila Bas Gavriel Pinchas. Welcome to our new venue this week, the BRS Cafe. And hopefully, again, we'll be Mekadesh the Chol. Okay, idea number one comes from Rabbi Alex Israel, who's a frequent person being quoted here in our Shirim, but I think he has a beautiful insight into a machlokas between the Ramban and the Rambam. Of course, this week's Parsha, we are introduced to the Mishkan, to the construction of the Mishkan, and we're going to spend a lot of weeks discussing the construction of the Mishkan, both in Truma and Tetzaveh, and again in Vayakal and Pekudei. And we're going to discuss in laborious fashion all of the construction, all of the vessels, etc. In the context, Rabbi Israel points out that there is a machlokas between the Ramban and the Rambam. What is the epicenter of the Mishkan? And essentially, what is the purpose of the Mishkan? Now, I'm purposely chewing this idea because I think it could frame everything we're going to be talking about forward in the next 5 weeks. And it's a Dvar Torah that you can really use. You can keep it in your back pocket. And basically, at any point between now and 5 weeks from now, if anyone asks you for Dvar Torah, you are ready to go. So you're going to thank me right now. Okay, the Ramban has a very famous insight into what the purpose of the Mishkan is. And the Ramban says that the purpose of the Mishkan is essentially a continuation of Har Sinai. And therefore, the Ramban in his commentary points out a number of different parallels between the Har Sinai experience and the experience of the Mishkan. Essentially, according to the Ramban, the whole purpose of the Mishkan is so that Har Sinai should not be a once in history experience, but that there should be a conduit, there should be a vessel through which we can experience that which happened at Har Sinai on a more regular basis. And so obviously, if the experience of Har Sinai was Hashem coming down and resting himself upon Har Sinai, it was Hashem being Megala himself, revealing his Shechina in this world. So now, in the absence of our Sinai, we need another way for us to be able to experience Hashem's presence in this world. And therefore, comes along the Ramban and says, that is what the Mishkan is. So the Mishkan, and again, if you want to give a part, like a real Parsha Shir, not one that is for an ADD generation, but you had a little bit more than 30 minutes, so you would develop exactly the parallelisms in terms of language that exists between the story of Har Sinai and the story of Mishkan, which is very fascinating. Based on this, the Ramban points out, and if you look at his commentary, that the epicenter, so to speak, if you look at page number 2, the top left-hand side, I'll read for you a little bit in English of the Ramban, says the Ramban, the central focus of the Mishkan, the place of God's presence, is the Aron. Right? If the whole purpose of the Mishkan is for Hashem to dwell in the Mishkan, to have a presence in this world, then what greater place than the Aron? Because, as it says, there I will meet you and I will speak to you from above the Kapores. This is the reason that the Aron is mentioned at the top of the list, for it is highest in level. Okay, so the Ramban says if the whole purpose of the Mishkan is for Hashem to have a dwelling place, to recreate the Har Sinai experience, he says the Aron is the epicenter. It is the central focus of the Mishkan. And therefore, Rabbi Israel says, the Ramban asks, as to the aim and purpose of the Mishkan and the Aron within it, he provides a straightforward answer. The Mishkan ensures that God will dwell amongst the people. Okay, and therefore that is reflected through the Aron, through the covenant that we have with Hashem, etc. Okay, so that is the Ramban. The Ramban says that the whole purpose of the Mishkan is a recreation of Har Sinai. In order to recreate Har Sinai, you need a place where Hashem is going to reveal His presence in this world. And therefore, the same way it happened at Har Sinai, so now it's going to happen in the central focus of the Mishkan is the Aron. It is where Hashem comes down. If you turn to page number 3 now, and again, all this is in English, and I brought you this entire article because if anyone wants to read it on their own, it's a very beautiful article in its entirety. But then he quotes the Rambam. And the Rambam points out a very obvious question. And that is that if the whole central focus of the Mishkan is the Aron, well, we know that there is a problem because in the second Beis HaMikdash, what was absent? There was no Aron. So how can you have a second Beis HaMikdash if the whole central focus of the Beis HaMikdash is missing? It has to be there's something else that is the central focus of the Mishkan / Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, he quotes the Rambam on the right-hand side of page number 3, where the Rambam writes, it is a positive commandment to make a house for Hashem, facilitating the sacrificial service. And the nation celebrate 3 times a year, and one makes a sacred vessel for the sanctuary, a sacrificial altar, its ramp, a washing lever, an altar, a menorah, and a table. Asked by Alex Israel, where is the Aron? If you read that entire commentary of the Rambam barely makes mention of the Aron, not in his description of the basic function of the temple, nor in the subsequent detail. In Rambam's perspective, the Mishkan, or the Mikdash, has a different focal point. The central focus of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, is Korbanos. It's the Mizbeach, not the Aron. And so here, Rabbi Israel develops, you have a central Machlokes. What is the central part of the Mishkan / Beis HaMikdash? According to the Rambam, it is the Aron. According to the Rambam, it is not the Aron. He barely mentions the Aron, especially because in the second Beis HaMikdash where there is no Aron, it can't be that was the central part. So rather, what is it? It is the Mizbeach, Korbanos, sacrifices, is the central component of the Mishkan. That is the Machlokes between the Ramban and the Rambam. What is the central part of the Mishkan? Says Rabbi Alex Israel, based on this, you see a fundamental philosophical difference in that what is the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash? What is the purpose of the Mishkan? And this is why I'm quoting it for you here this week, because this will shape how you view everything we talk about in the Mishkan for the next 5 weeks, and it can give you Dvar Torah in any context that you're going to speak. What is the purpose of the Mishkan? And if you look on the bottom right-hand side, he writes here, is the Mishkan the place in which God approaches us, or is it the place in which we approach God? In other words, is it that Hashem initiates, or is it that we initiate? Putting the Aron, like the Ramban does, at the center means that the primary function of the sanctuary is the creation of a place for the Shekhinah, God's presence, so that Hashem will come and approach us. Hashem approaches man. If the Aron, again, the Aron is there, and Hashem dwells in the Aron. Putting the Mizbeach at the center reverses the direction completely. With the Mizbeach at the center, I focus upon how not Hashem is going to approach me, but how I am going to serve Hashem. I see myself as His servant. The Mishkan is a place that allows me to approach the Almighty. This, top of page number 4, facilitates a mode of service. Now the aim is not so much as God descending to earth, but a mankind ascending to Him. Man ascends to God. And so therefore, that's what he develops as the fundamental machlokas between the Ramban and the Rambam as to what is the purpose of the Mishkan. Is the purpose of the Mishkan for Hashem to come to us, or is the purpose of the Mishkan for us to come to Hashem? According to the Ramban, it is a place for Hashem to come to us. It's a place for us to experience the Kedusha of the Shekhinah. According to the Rambam, it's a very different idea. Kedusha only happens when we create it. The Mizbeach means that we have to bring the sacrifice. It's not so much that Hashem is descending to us, but it's that we have to facilitate ascending towards Hashem. And so, according to the Rambam, it's not us as the passive observers to Hashem's Kedusha, but rather it is us as active participants in creating that Kedusha. He says perhaps that's the quote-unquote dispute between the Sefer of Shmos and the Sefer of Vayikra. Shmos is about building the Mishkan, and it's very much about Hashem bringing His presence onto the Mishkan. Vayikra is all about what? It's all about korbanos. It's about us creating that sense of kedusha. And again, this is the fundamental machlokas. Do we wait for inspiration, or do we have to create inspiration? Do we wait passively as observers for Hashem to reveal and for Hashem to create an environment of kedusha, or are we the ones who initiate it? There's a member of our shul, obviously I will not mention his name. He always says to me and Rabbi Goldberg in some variation, he says, Rabbi, if you only came to my house on Shabbos morning and got me out of bed, I'd come to shul. Or, you know, he says, Rabbi, if you were only in my house when I was on my computer, I wouldn't look at things I shouldn't look at. Rabbi, like, there are always different variations of this. And I always say to him, that's not what Judaism is. Judaism is not that I'm going to create it for you all the time. There's a place for that. Obviously, we believe that certain times and places have more holiness, where it's a more auspicious for us to be able to connect. But ultimately, as the Rambam, I think, delineates, there has to be a sense of the Mizbeach, which means I have to create that sense of Kedusha. I can't always wait for someone else to create it for me, but I have to be able to create it for myself as well. This is an idea that exists across the board in Judaism, where sometimes Hashem reveals himself, and other times, even after Hashem reveals himself, we have to then rebuild and recreate it on our own. So for example, the greatest example is Pesach. Pesach Hashem, of course, appears to the Jewish people. We were on the 49th level of Tumah. We were not worthy of redemption. Hashem redeemed us whether we were worthy or not. But then what happens afterwards? We have Sfiras Omer, where we have to take that Kedusha that was given to us on a silver platter by Hashem, and we spend 49 days literally climbing the mountain on our own, but now it's us putting in the work to find the inspiration. And it's the balance of the two of them. Sometimes Hashem gives the inspiration, but at other times we have to find it on our own. And oftentimes it's when we find it on our own that is most everlasting. That is the idea of Rabbi Alex Israel. That is the fundamental machlokas dispute about what the Mishkan is and what the focus, the central part of the Mishkan is as well. That is idea number one. Idea number two comes from page number 5, the Belzer Rebbe. The Belzer Rebbe is quoted from Rabbi Biederman, and I looked high and low in Otzer HaChachma, and I could not find it in any Belzer Sefer. But I'm going to trust Rabbi Biederman that he quoted it correctly. I couldn't find it in a primary source, and so therefore I'm quoting it to you from Rabbi Biederman Sefer. Rabbi Biederman has probably one of the most famous questions of this week's Parsha, and that is, what is the deal with the half measurements? We know that when it comes to the Aron, the Pasuk says, Ve'atsu Aron atzeshi tim, amatayim v'chetzi archo, ve'ama v'chetzi rachvo, ve'ama v'chetzi komaso. Everything's a half measurement. And of course that's strange, and it distinguishes the Aron from other of the vessels of the Mishkan, which are whole measurements as opposed to half measurements. And the Belzer Rebbe wants to understand why it is specifically when it comes to the Aron that it is half measurements. That is the question of the Belzer Rebbe, and it's a very famous question, and many answers have been given, but I like his answer. Again, the question is, why half measurements? Why not whole measurements? And he says the following premise. We have quoted this medrash many times, that in Sefer Brachos, when the Pasuk says, Vihine tov ma'od, that it's very good, the medrash says, tov ze yetzer tov, ma'od ze yetzer hara. That tov ma'od, being very good, is the yetzer hara. And ask the Belzer Rebbe, and we've asked this question before, why is very good a yetzer hara? Isn't that something that we should aspire for? Isn't that something that we should be ambitious for, to constantly been improving and striving? We want to be tov ma'od. Yes, someone on the street, you do an interview with somebody, say, you know, what do you think about yourself? And they say, yeah, I guess I'm okay. That's not very inspiring. You want someone who thinks that they're on a high level, or they at least aspire for a high level. So why is tov ma'od the yetzer hara? So he writes here, again, it's a premise we've developed a lot in the past, but it's going to tie very beautifully into this week's Parsha. He says, "Ubir ki achein ze'eno ze'eno chafetz ela b'tov ma'od." Someone who only expects perfection, someone who only expects to achieve greatness. Be'amro, and he says to himself, "Raki magia lepiska dahari nene mitchil be'avoda." He says, "Only if I'm going to get it 100%, am I going to try in the first place." Zewa yetzahara. That is the yetzahara. That is a mindset that all of us have to rid ourselves of. Because if that's your mindset, if your mindset is perfection or bust, I'm either going to get it right or why bother trying? So what ends up happening is some people say, okay, taka good. Why bother trying? If I can't be perfect, if I can't get it right, so they have yeyush. They give up hope altogether. And so their pursuit of perfection actually stops them from even starting or trying to take baby steps moving forward in the first place. And therefore, a person's going to have the mindset, he writes on the bottom right-hand side, instead of making incremental improvements, the person's just going to say to themselves, if I'm not going to get it right, why bother trying in the first place? And what's going to happen is they're not going to bother trying in the first place. And again, it's that pursuit of perfection which is going to prevent them from having any growth whatsoever. It's going to cause them to remain stagnant. Ukshena davar ola biyadam. And then what happens? Let's say the person actually tries to start, but he doesn't achieve the perfection that he aspired for. Harehim nishbarim legamrei. Now he's completely broken. Now he feels bad about himself. Now instead of it making him feel good, he feels like a failure because he didn't achieve the level that he really wanted. Shainim is stopping Mashi Yeshlahem. He's not happy with the progress that he's made. Veinim smeichem bechalko an ruchani. And instead of saying, wow, that's amazing, yesterday I was here, and today I've grown so much, instead he looks at how much more he has to grow, and he feels bad about himself. And that's a horrible mindset, he says. Says the Bez Rebbe, that's the mindset we have to rid ourselves of. That is a dangerous mindset. It is the mindset of the Yitzhahara. And so therefore, we have to retrain ourselves to focus not on perfection, but on the beauty of progress. Not on perfection, but on the beauty of progress. And that has to change what our definition of success looks like in the way we talk to ourselves and our self-talk, in the way we talk to our children, and in the way we message in the community. That there's no one singular... I remember I once asked my Rebbe. My Rebbe's in yeshiva in Shalavim, and I asked him, I said, how are the boys this year? He got so upset at me for asking that question. He goes, how can you ask me like a generic question, how are the boys this year? He says, we have 82 Shana Aleph boys, whatever the number was. He goes, and each one has a different definition of what's good for them. So if a boy started here and is now up to here, that's amazing from him. If a boy started here and is still there, then that's failure. He says, so you can't ask me, how are the boys this year? Each boy has a different definition of what success looks like. And so that comes back to here. We have to retrain our mindset to focus on progress and not a pursuit of perfection, because the pursuit of perfection has enormous dangers. It's dangerous in the sense that it can make you feel bad about yourself, it can make you have yeyush, and it can make you never feel that sense of satisfaction that one gets when they are able to have progress. Based on this, the Belzer Rebbe says, now you understand. I hope you all saw, I was telegraphing this a mile and a half away. Now we understand the half measurements in the Mishkan. And that was our question. Why by the Aron specifically are they half measurements and not whole measurements? And he says the following on the bottom left-hand side. V'lazeh hayumidos Aron shvuros. The measurements of the Aron are broken. They're not whole. They're half. Ki Aron hu keneged haTorah. The Aron represents spiritual growth. L'lame das l'misha osek b'Torah af im lo asagas adayin esru madrega. It's to show us that in spiritual pursuits, it's not about perfection. It's not about one definition of what we have to aspire for. But it could be that your measurements to get there are going to be broken. In other words, it could be for you, it's one step forward, two steps back. But as long as you keep stepping forward, eventually you'll get to the destination. So they might not be whole measurements. It might not be clean and neat and perfect, but it's going to get you there little by little in a much more healthy way. And therefore he writes on the top of page number 6, on the right-hand side, he says, this is why it's rak hatza'im, it's half measurements. Yesh l'chal ismoach l'itchazek b'yadiyah ki Hashem imcha. You have to know that even if you don't get to that perfect state and you only get halfway there, that Hashem gets nachas from that. Because as long as you are on the road of progress, even if you're not on the road of perfection, you're much better off. In fact, we shouldn't strive for perfection. We should only strive for the road of progress. Now he says, now you understand not just the half measurements by the Aron, but you understand the Machasis HaShekel. Right, Machasis HaShekel, again, the famous question. We asked it last week, we're going to ask it in 2 weeks. Why is it a half shekel? Why not a whole shekel? And the famous answer is because two halves make a whole, and it's to show our interdependence amongst Klal Yisrael. Says the Belzer Rebbe, no, it's to show that even a half shekel, even if your service of Hashem can't be perfect, it's still something to celebrate. It's still something to be proud of. I cannot emphasize this idea enough. We've said it in different formulations in our shir, probably 24 times. And I'm going to say it two more because I think it's such an important idea. So many people make this mistake either way, either because they expect perfection, they don't start in the first place, or they start, but because they see other people and they see where, and they judge themselves by other people's definition of success, they feel bad about themselves. And when you feel bad about yourself in Judaism, you're never going to push yourself more. Nobody who has ever felt bad about themselves in Judaism has been a successful Eved Hashem. Spoiler alert. If your mental health is not whole, if your awareness and relationship with God is not a healthy one, you will never serve Hashem in a healthy way. And so we have to retrain ourselves that it's not about the pursuit of perfection, but rather it is about being on the road of progress. And it's to change that verbiage, change that language, change that mindset that I think will enormously not only benefit us, benefit our children, and benefit our communities as a whole as well. I'll just share with you anecdotally, one of the most powerful, for any introduction, if you learn a sefer and you don't read the introduction, you're missing out. The gems of any sefer are always in the introductions of the sefer. I've quoted here the introduction of the Chai Adam sefer before, where he talks about what it means to be a businessman and how to find time for learning. It's gold, and I can give you, you know, the I can give you example after example where the introduction is really gems and gems. So in the introduction of the Chovas HaLevavos, he writes something that when I read the first time, it literally almost like shook me to my core and really caused me to look in the mirror. He says, you know, when people first told me that I should write a book about some of the thoughts that I have, I thought to myself, who am I? And who am I to write a book? And the book's not gonna be any good and nobody's gonna read it. And all this self-doubt and self-talk and all these types of like narratives that we convince ourselves of. And he says, I almost didn't write this book. And then I realized that, okay, the book might not be perfect and I might not be the perfect conduit for the book, but I'm gonna do my part. And if it's good, it's good. If it's not, it's not. But at least I'm going to like take my steps forward. And you read that and you say to yourself, imagine if he had had the opposite. Imagine if the author of the Chovas HaLevavos, instead of writing the Sefer, had convinced himself that because he didn't think it was a worthwhile Sefer, he didn't write in the first place. What a fundamental Sefer of our history would have been lost for one reason and one reason only. And that is because someone's negative self-taught talked them out of trying something because they didn't know if it would be good enough. And I think in each one of our own lives, we have examples of that, where we don't even try something because either we're afraid of failure or because we're afraid that we're not going to achieve the perfection that we want, and therefore we don't try at all. So we have to rid ourselves of perfection and instead train ourselves to focus on progress. That is idea number two. So again, idea number one is about what is the focus of the Mishkan. Is it the Aron? Is it the Mizbeach? Is it Hashem comes to us or we come to Hashem? Idea number two is the broken measurements of the Aron. Don't strive for perfection because you'll be disappointed over and over again. You have to realize that even if you can only get halfway there, but you're on the road of progress, that is what we celebrate in Judaism.
In this article.
Well, I'm not up to that yet. Idea number three comes from Rav Yehuda Amital. Rav Yehuda Amital writes a very beautiful insight here. That's page number seven. And he writes the following. He says, if you look at a lot of what we're going to read about in Truma and later on in Parshas Vayakel, one gets the impression that the Torah here encourages goodwill and volunteerism, right? We're running a capital campaign. We run a shul. Of course, I want everyone to volunteer for the shul. Not only your time and not only your energy, but, you know, if anyone is inclined to, Yehuda's right over there, you're welcome to volunteer your resources as well. Okay, and that's exactly what one gets the impression of when reading the Parshios of Truma and Vayakel, etc. He says, however, when you look at Rashi, Rashi writes that it's the sockets which support the beams of the Mishkan were manufactured not from voluntary donations, but from the mandatory half shekel tax levied from the people regardless of their general contributions. And so here you have a Mishkan that is, so to speak, celebrated for its volunteerism, and yet the sockets, that which holds the entire Mishkan together, is not a product of volunteerism, but rather of obligation. It's the things that people were obligated to give. And so here you have a tension. Which one's better? Is it when people volunteer, or is it when people do something out of a sense of obligation and duty? And he writes, therefore, on the right hand side of page number 7, where I have the bracket, Rashi here therefore teaches us by saying that it's the sockets. Again, the sockets is like the nuts and bolts, that which keeps it together. Rashi teaches us that although the Mishkan did require voluntary donations, the sockets, the very basis and foundation of the Mishkan, were built not from voluntary contributions, but from mandatory taxation. One must inculcate within himself, before anything else, a profound sense of commitment. So it's not just about doing what you want to do or what feels good to you to do, but it's sometimes training ourselves to say, I'm doing something because I have to do. And that is a language which he'll develop, but I'm going to be a little bit off the page right now, which unfortunately has become lost in our generation, specifically amongst the younger generation. We've had many speakers over the last few weeks who provided different perspectives on this very topic when it comes to chinuch, for example. We've had Rabbi Kalish here, Rabbi Goldberg and I just interviewed Rabbi Center, different perspectives about this topic of obligation versus volunteerism. In other words, is a sense of obligation healthy or not? Is a sense of telling a child, telling ourselves, you might not want to do something, something might not feel comfortable for you, but you have to do it. Judaism has obligations. Judaism has responsibilities. Judaism requires commitment, whether you like it or whether you don't like it. Or do we say that in our day and age, children are different and children expect something different? In the language of requirement and obligation and commitment, is a language that's going to scare people off and be a trigger for people, and therefore we have to focus instead on the sense of volunteerism, do it because it makes you feel good, do it because you want to. And Rabbi Amital develops this, if you turn to page 8, he says this almost explicitly and definitely takes a side on this. And I'm going to read for you verbatim because I can't say it better than he could. He says, this message takes on particular significance today, when Western society seeks to avoid any form of burden and obligation, a tendency that has made its way into our community as well. You tell a child they have to do something, what's the child's immediate response? No, now I don't want to. You tell me I have to? Now I put up barriers. Now I put up walls. Now I'm triggered. Now it's something that I hate for life, right? The prevalent attitude encourages only one to only do what his heart desires, and any type of coercion is considered harmful and threatening. People today raise onto a pedestal the idea of human rights and freedom and view any form of obligation or commitment as undermining this concept. Many have forgone the institution of marriage, preferring to live together without any official bond, which that demands loyalty and mutual devotion. After all, why should I commit to one partner when I could have multiple partners? Many have lost motivation to serve in the IDF since they feel no commitment to defend the country. Society has divested itself of virtually any form of obligation and commitment. Any parent here knows exactly what Rav Amital is talking about. Whether it's getting your child to go to Minyan, whether it's getting your child to learn, whether it's in each house can have a different example. But getting children to do something in our day and age is very complicated. I don't know about you, when I grew up, my mother's listening to this, maybe she'll offer a rebuttal next week when I'm not here, she'll give the shiur. You know, I think Rebbetzin Goldberg is giving the Amuna class next week when we're in Israel, so maybe my mom will come and give the rebuttal as part of the Parsha Chabur next week. But I, at least in my fantasized memory of how amazing I was as a child, so I would like to think that when my parents told me to do something, so you had to do it. There was no negotiation. My father said to do something, you did it whether you liked it or not. Now everything's a negotiation. Now everything's about how you feel. Everything's about, do I want to? Do I feel it? Is it a trigger for me? How is it a part of me? So Rav Amital says, no, there's a healthy conversation to be had about obligation and commitment and instilling that value within our children. He writes, we must rise above this dangerous attitude. Within the religious community, there are those who promote Torah study only because it is interesting and enjoyable. We must understand that Torah study must be based primarily on a sense of commitment, and only thereafter can we speak of enjoyment and interest generated thereof. Anyone who's read the biography of Rebbetzin Kanievsky. So they write in there that Rav Chaim Kanievsky, when he referred to his learning regimen during the day, he specifically referred to them as chovos. Chovos means an obligation. And they write in there that the reason why Rav Chaim says he refers to them as chovos is to remind himself that it's an obligation. That the same way I get up and I have an obligation to brush my teeth, and I have an obligation to go to work, and I, right, there are certain things that are non-negotiable. I can't show up at work tomorrow and say to Rabbi Goldberg, you know, Rabbi Goldberg, I know that's part of my job to give a drush on Shabbos, but this week, I'm not feeling like I want to give a drush to the Shabbos. This week, it's a trigger, right? So Rabbi Goldberg would say, that's very nice. There's the door, right? And there's someone better looking in New York who's willing to take your job. No, that the same way I have a sense of obligation, duty, and responsibility in my job, so I should have that in my religious life as well. And therefore, Rav Chaim Kanievsky said it was chovos. I have a chiyuv to learn Talmud Torah every day. That doesn't matter how I feel. It doesn't matter what mood I wake up in the morning. There, some days I might learn better, some days I might learn worse, but I have an obligation to learn Torah the same way I have an obligation to brush my teeth and to go to work. And so therefore, it's a non-negotiable. It's not something we debate. We have to do it. And so Rav Amital says, therefore, while so much of the Mishkan was volunteer, the sockets, the thing that held the Mishkan together was based on an obligatory contribution to show us that ultimately when it comes to religion, we have to reinstill that sense of obligation and commitment and duty into our conversation. So we saw three ideas. Idea number one came from Rabbi Alex Israel, about the machlokas between the Ramban and the Rambam. Is the Mishkan for Hashem to come to us or for us to come to Hashem? Idea number two from Belz Rebbe, why is it the half measurements? It's because we're not in pursuit of perfection. That is a very dangerous and unhealthy mindset, but rather we are in the pursuit of progress. And idea number three, Rav Amital, writing in 2018, years ago, but I think it's even more relevant now than it was back then, and that is why the sockets... Why are the sockets, the thing that holds the Mishkan together, specifically something that was brought from obligatory, mandatory contributions to show us that ultimately in Judaism, obviously we want to feel the joy, and obviously we want to feel the excitement, but we also have to feel the responsibility. We have to feel the commitment, and we shouldn't be afraid to introduce language of loyalty and devotion and commitment and obligation into the conversation that we have with children and grandchildren and students. And with that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.